Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I am your host, Jason Verlinde. As always, that's John Rauhouse playing in the background. And the big news around these parts is that our 52nd issue of the Fretboard Journal magazine is mailing to subscribers right now. So if you are a subscriber, don't yell at me just yet. It is in the mail system. If you are not a subscriber and you love the idea of a coffee table book styled magazine that comes to your door four times a year, filled with profiles and stories of great players from all genres, as well as great instrument maker profiles, this magazine is for you. Go to fretboardjournal.com, click on the subscribe button. Do so quickly. Our issues sell out now very quickly. We just sold out of our 50th issue. Our 51st issue is going to sell out in probably the next week or so. So nab a copy of the 52nd issue while you can, and we will mail it out to you within about a week. Exciting stuff. We've also got a ton of new podcasts coming. I'm going to be doing a little mini series on the Fretboard Summit and some of the stuff happening there. That's our big guitar gathering, hang, festival, party, whatever you want to call it. It's taking place August 24th to 26th of 2023 at Chicago's Old Town School of Folk Music. And is pretty much the only place in the world where you can meet, I don't know, 30 or 40 of the people you've read about in our magazine or heard on this podcast. And you can pick their brains, you can learn from them, you can jam with them, do whatever you want. It's going to be a blast. Speaking of a blast, this week's episode is a blast from our relatively recent past, right when the pandemic hit. Craig Ventresco and Meredith Axelrod, two incredible musicians from San Francisco, started doing Facebook live streams on a daily basis. Basically, as you probably can remember, all the venues shut down. Everybody started doing live streaming. Craig and Meredith didn't stop live streaming, though. And earlier this week, they celebrated their 1,000th live stream on Facebook. This is a monumental undertaking. If you've ever tuned into any of their live streams, you know that they are two of the finest practitioners of ragtime guitar, old-time guitar, whatever you want to call it guitar. We kind of get into that. There's really no easy way to describe what they do, but they play incredible Tin Pan Alley ragtime guitar, vaudeville-inspired music, and they've been doing this on Facebook Live for 1,000 times now. Actually, more than 1,000 times. They've recorded a few more. It's an incredible story. I wanted to share it all with you. I want you to go follow them. I mean, how cool is it to know that if you're having a bad day, you can log onto Facebook at the right time and run into Craig and Meredith performing an hour-long set for you all for free. They do have a tip jar, which they, I'm sure, would appreciate if you used, but it's a truly amazing thing. I've tuned into so many of these, as have a bunch of you from around the world, and I love that they're doing this, and as you'll hear, there's no sign of them slowing down, so it's a cool little slice of the internet. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Before we get into it, a quick reminder, we have a couple of sponsors, and our sponsors are truly special brands that love the podcast, love you all, and want to give back a little bit. So Peghead Nation, one of the great music instruction portals around, is offering anyone listening to this show your first month free or $20 off of an annual subscription just by using the promo code FRETBOARD when you check out. Stringjoy Strings, an incredible indie string company out of Nashville, Tennessee, is offering you all 10% off of your first order at stringjoy.com. All you got to do is use the promo code FRETBOARD when you check out. A bunch of you have written to tell me that you love your Stringjoy string purchase. So keep those coming. Keep telling them so they know this podcast slot is working. Deering Banjos is once again sponsoring the podcast. Check out all of their offerings at deeringbanjos.com. I'm impartial to the Deering's 10 Brooks line as well as the Good Time line. But you really can't go wrong with any Deering Banjo, folks. So check them out. Tell them the Fretboard Journal sent you. Last but definitely not least, our friends at iZotope, Native Instruments and Plugin Alliance just launched the Summer of Sound, their biggest annual sales special with 50% or more off of all of their software and even deeper discounts on iZotope upgrades for their customers. iZotope is also offering Audio Lens for free during the Summer of Sound. The sale ends on July 6th. Those are our sponsors. Again, Fretboard Journal 52 mailing to all of our subscribers right now. Exciting times. Bit of a nail biter for me. I hope you all love it. And today's guests on the podcast are Meredith Axelrod and Craig Ventresco, two of the coolest musicians you will ever get to know out of San Francisco, California. A great chat. Follow their Facebook live stream. It is a lot of fun.
Craig and Meredith,
I think we talked 3 years ago, and you guys, because of the pandemic, we're doing these live Facebook performances, and you were up to like 100, maybe.
Yeah, now we're up to 100,000.
Well, almost. You guys over the weekend did your 1,000th performance, which is just mind-boggling. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I think during the start of the COVID lockdown, there were a lot of musicians doing this, and most of them faded away. As you've been doing more and more and making this sort of a regularly occurring thing, has the audience just grown? Has it dropped? Has it stayed steady? Like, what does it look like?
Well, it fluctuates. It tends to fluctuate. It peaked in, I think, in 2020. And then declined, I think, over the winter of 2020 to 2021. Then it proceeded to fluctuate. Sometimes the audience size increases for a few weeks, and I have no idea why.
Strange. And are people, you still have a tip jar? Are people still tipping like they always have?
Yeah, we're so lucky that that's the case.
It's so cool that you've been doing this and that you've been able to do it. And I mean, 1,000 performances, you've already done more than 1,000, I know, just in the last day, but have you had to expand your repertoire and like learn new songs just to keep it interesting for yourself?
Well, personally, I'd say that there have always been, I know a lot of songs anyhow, but there always were songs that I wanted to sit down and learn, but there either wasn't time or there was no real practical reason to do it. Or so I half knew a bunch of songs that I sat down and finally learned. And then there's so many songs. It's like every time you get a new bunch of old records or sheet music or something, there's so much material. So I think we probably would have been adding to our repertoire anyway, but I think we've played like over 2,500 songs so far. And there's just so much good stuff.
It's incredible.
So that would be my answer. I don't know about, I think.
Yeah, we were so lucky. Craig already knew so many songs that it was viable to do a unique set every day.
But that wasn't really our goal. Like, we repeat songs.
Sure. No, we repeat songs, but it's still viable to play a set every day because there's
so much stuff.
Yeah, there's enough stuff.
Yeah.
But of course, we've continued to learn songs.
Meredith started playing, somebody gave her a set of a vibraphone, which she sounds amazing on. And that's been a real kick the last 6 months or so. She's been playing a lot on the vibraphone, which really adds a lot, I think.
Did somebody watching know you played vibraphone, or was this just kind of a random gift and then you had to learn how to play the vibraphone?
It's the latter.
Here, take my vibraphone. Okay.
Yeah.
No, she plays piano and she was playing bells, like orchestra bells.
Yeah.
Already on the show.
That's wild. Are there any songs that have been, I mean, off the top of your head that have just, you've played more than the others? Like, are there a couple that you just are almost on every set?
No.
No.
No, no, no. But other songs we've played. For some reason, we've played Some of These Days too many times. Mm-hmm. There's songs that get requested too much.
Somebody actually compiled a list of all the songs we've played with the number of times we've played it. And it looks like the most amount of times we've played any song has been like 20, which is still good. It seems like there's a lot of things we've played 3 or 4 times. And there's some stuff we've played once or twice and all other combinations. But
there's stuff we've played once and totally forgot about.
Yeah, and like Meredith said, there's stuff that gets requested. Like people request the song The Storybook Ball all the time. And yeah. So we do that a lot. People, that's the cool thing about these Facebook things. People write comments, and so they can request in real time, and we can oblige.
It is cool. You guys are like the Grateful Dead. People are cataloging every time you've performed something.
We're a lot like the Grateful Dead. I would say. That's about all you have to say.
How has the recording process, filming process on your end evolved since you started? I mean, I know these kind of started just like, let's see what happens. Now has the studio changed? Has the mic set up and everything else changed?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot. We've gone through many iterations. Like at first, let's think. We've used, I think, a cell phone and a lapel mic. People said we needed fancier stuff for years, and then we got some fancier stuff, and I realized, like, when you start getting fancier equipment, it's like a never ending. Like, then the fancier equipment wasn't compatible anymore, so I had to get more fancier stuff to make it compatible. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the whole chain gets broken when you start upgrading. But it was, yeah. So like I even bought an external encoder box because the limitation seems to be, on streaming itself. Like, I think either it's a limitation of Facebook itself, YouTube itself, or the fastest internet available at our address. We've changed internet providers. We've tried a lot of things. We used to cut out. Our stream used to be kind of difficult to maintain electronically. Like our internet used to fail, I think. And we had to go around fixing this and that and getting different stuff. But ultimately, what we do now is we stream from cell phones with a lapel mic. Yeah.
You also have like a mic. It's like the only time I've ever seen a mic come over your shoulder, and it sounds great, but what is that? What's going on there?
Well, I put it on a gooseneck stand so that I could position it in space exactly where I would estimate it should be.
Yeah, without it being in the way of the camera. It's clever.
Thank you. Yeah, it comes from behind us so that it's not between us and the camera. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. So do you guys stream both to Facebook and YouTube, all the shows, or just some of them onto YouTube?
All of them that we can. Facebook has the most people listening. I guess YouTube, I haven't looked at it in a while. But we... Facebook is do or die, and YouTube is if it works. YouTube's a little bit less, YouTube's not as, it's a little more problematic on the technical side. YouTube is more likely to fail. We do Instagram as well. We stream on Instagram. We haven't done it lately. Like we had to drop Instagram for a while just because of technology changes and keeping up with everything. And three platforms is a bit much. Yeah. We also have tried streaming on Twitch, but it was a bit much. Each platform has its own demands and quirks.
Are there a lot of old time ragtime guitar lovers on Twitch?
No.
Okay.
We didn't find a lot of those. No.
Just throwing it out there.
Yeah, a lot of people on Twitch. What do they do? I can't remember the verb, but they like. I don't know. The verb is like synonymous with dispense, but it's not dispense. They dispense dope beats, there are a lot of channels around dope beats. And I guess our music, it doesn't fit into that category on Twitch. So we didn't find much success there.
Yeah, you're more dope in the classic opium den sense, I guess, but it doesn't really apply.
Yeah, it didn't work on their platform, I guess.
Yeah, where is most of your audience? Are you must have some data from Facebook or just, you know, where the tips are coming from. Are most of the folks in the States or do you have a huge overseas following too?
It's heavy in the States, but it's all over the world. But it's heavy in the States.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what has doing this consistent live streaming done for, like, are you turning away gigs in real life? Because it's like, well, we have our virtual gig we have to do.
I've turned down a few gigs.
It's incredible.
Turned down gigs because they sounded like they'd be such a hassle. Like, I still like to play gigs, but it just depends what they are. I think that's a really fortunate thing. I'll always be grateful for it. I don't have to say yes to everything right now. You know, I'm still happy to play gigs. We just played a fun gig a couple of days ago, but yeah, it's nice to be able to pick your battles a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, without you divulging your whole financial situation, like, are you making as much now as you were pre-COVID playing shows around San Francisco?
Yeah, probably.
You sound sad.
No, I'm not sure. I mean, I'd have to think about it. I never was playing big, high-profile shows around San Francisco. I just would play different bars and clubs and stuff like that. So, yeah, probably so. Man, I don't really miss playing in a lot of bars, honestly. That's really nice.
Oh, I mean, you guys don't have to deal with any venue headaches or weird managers or anything. It's just you and the internet.
Yeah, we're responsible for our own fate, which is really nice. You know, I always, with gigs around here and anywhere, for people who specialize in some kind of music that isn't super popular with the masses, you've got to get a gig. If you get a gig you like, it's got to be the kind of thing where the owner or the manager really wants you there, you know, and they're in your corner. But if historically with me, if I go around asking for work, playing ragtime, it doesn't last that long. It's never what the owners want, you know. And so.
Sometimes we've had some good, we've had some great gigs. Like, we had this long, long running gig at the Cafe Divine.
Yeah, but that's what I was thinking of. The owner loved us there. He watches our show online. He asked us to play there.
Really great people here, that really great friends that have venues, but.
Yeah, that's true. But it would be hard to, like, consistently work them these days, you know.
Well, now that you guys are part of this like remote gig economy, do you even need to be in San Francisco anymore? Have you thought about moving somewhere lower rent?
We have to be near an airport that has direct flights to places we have to go.
Yeah. You guys are still doing like some festivals, right?
Yeah.
What's on the horizon for 2023?
Well, I don't think I have anything for 2023.
Okay.
But
yeah, I got nothing.
Yeah, probably not.
Well, all right. Here's $1 million question. You've done 1,000 of these. Are you just going to keep doing them every day? Like, do you have an exit plan, or is this working for you and you're going to just do another 1,000?
We definitely don't have an exit plan.
Yeah, we have people who watch it every night, and I wouldn't want to give it up, really. It's the most musically intense and rewarding thing I've ever got to do. So I'm not in any hurry.
Yeah, because we play everything we want. We play anything and everything we want. So, I mean, we could do that at a restaurant and stuff, but
you'd have a hard time lugging all your instruments there. You play like 7 instruments. Like,
yeah, and it's quiet here, and it's nice.
Do you record these like high def, like just the audio, just for future use, or when they're out into the world via Facebook, like that's kind of the end all?
Man, I wish we were doing that more, but most of it is just out there on Facebook.
Yeah, I really wish we were doing that. We did a little bit at the start. It's just that I had to simplify. Because it was just too much to deal with, so many machines that run out of batteries and cords that have a lifespan. They're like the lifespan's ending. We had to simplify.
It's too bad. I know if we were to go back over all those shows, there are definitely some really good performances in there that I wish I could just have high def versions of. But yeah, they're just sort of out there now.
Well, I mean, this brings up another thing, which is like, you guys were already playing music festivals and local venues and playing at an incredibly high level for the style of music that you're doing. Has playing almost 1,000 back-to-back shows changed? Like, do you feel like you're better players now and a better singer?
Yeah, I do. I mean, like, A, I hope so. I really hope so. B, that was one of my goals with this. I mean, one of my motivations for doing this was, what if I'm forced to perform publicly every day, maybe dozens of times? I never thought it would be hundreds, but dozens of times. Or what if, you know, since, I mean, it's March 2020 and there's this big catastrophe, what if, I guess some people are learning a new language. Some people are using the time, you know, some people are using the opportunity to learn a new skill. What if I follow suit and my new skill is live performance every day, and second nature, and I think it has improved my skills, and then you know, at least on the vibraphone, on guitar, it's always been very easy for me to accompany and to to know what chord to play, even if I don't know the song, because I can guess, I can predict, well, it's got to be this, it's got to be, you know, one of these three chords, and, you know, it couldn't be anything outside of that. And then and then hear it in a split second without anybody noticing that I had to listen for it. Mm-hmm. Like, that's always been. So what I need to get better at is finding the notes on the fretboard when I hear something more complicated, like, you know, when this pertains to soloing,
yeah,
or playing the melody. Like, I've always been, so, you know, I don't struggle to do what I already know how to do. And I've done a lot of that. I've become a better bells player, a better bells and vibraphone player. And I might have become a better cello player. And I might have even improved on guitar a little bit.
I mean, 1,000 performances, you must have, right?
I think you sound amazing, but I've thought that for... And I definitely have improved on guitar, I'm sure.
Great.
All that practice.
Well, Meredith got a free vibraphone out of this. Have you gotten any free guitars, Craig?
Well, not guitars, but we have so many instruments here. Like, I already had Todd had given me that Ferlini.
Yeah.
And a friend of ours gave us a banjo mandolin, and we've received some ukuleles. We got a lot of instruments here that we didn't have before. Mandolin, an accordion, and also stuff like old records and sheet music, just like crazy stuff that people have given us that we really are using a lot. So that's amazing too.
I mean, you've always had this encyclopedic knowledge of, you know, ragtime guitar. Are you actually just finding still old sheet music and transcribing it for guitar?
Well, I've never, ever been able to do that. I don't read music fast enough or well enough to transcribe anything. I'm pretty much an ear player. Mm-hmm. But the more I play, my whole life, I've always tried to tell myself, well, I'm playing the name of the note I'm playing or the chord I'm playing. And I'm always looking at my left hand. So I think what this show has done is it's enabled me to be able to play in most keys comfortably, you know, I used to think about playing complicated songs in the key of E, for example, as being really difficult, because even though I play blues all the time. And so if you play blues a lot, of course you play in the key of E a lot. But then when I started thinking about playing like complicated pieces of music, like rags in a key like E natural, that used to be intimidating to me. And luckily with all these shows, keys aren't as intimidating to me. And I've been trying to force myself to play neither the key things were written in or just different keys, or, you know, I'm trying to challenge myself, and that's nice. So, oh, and we've been playing guitars that are tuned differently, which is enjoyable. Like Meredith's guitar is often tuned like a step down, or she has a guitar that she tunes
a fourth down.
Fourth down.
Yeah, I love that. I love having two guitars that are tuned differently.
But to answer your question, I've always been looking for 78s and cylinders and music, and I'm always learning songs if possible. So yeah, that would happen live stream or no live stream. It just sort of steps it up to, it gives all that a much more practical, viable reason, you know, rather than just, I want to sit in my room and listen to records or something.
I'd add, transcribing is what you're doing. It's just that you're not doing it carefully with a pen and paper, but you're like, you'll read the sheet music and then hear the song in your head and then go play it on the guitar. You're not thinking like, well, I'll do the counterpoint with my ring finger, and then in the key that I'm going to play this in, this note is that note and this one is that one. But you're essentially doing that without going, you're skipping all the steps. but you are transcribing.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Do you have, I mean, everybody knows Scott Joplin. Do you have favorite songwriters and composers from back in the day that you wish more people knew about, that you keep referring to?
Well, yeah, there's so many, because there were people writing songs. That was just the turn of the century. Was this amazing age in pop music in America where people were self-publishing things in different little towns, and they were publishing things in big cities. There was just so much music around everywhere, and a lot of it was the kind of stuff that would have been considered really lowbrow, I guess, in the, you know, the 1880s or 1890s or whatever. But yeah, there were so many great composers like Egbert Van Alstyne and Theodore Morse, and, you know, people who were well known in their day, I guess, but who aren't that well known now. There's so much stuff out there, just crazy. And there are people who wrote one great song and disappeared. And there's also a lot of sheet music you find with only a person's, instead of their first name, you'll see an initial. And a lot of times that's a woman. Like there were a lot of women who composed music, but their full name was usually not on the sheet.
Nobody would have liked it if they knew it was a woman.
Yeah, I don't quite understand all the reasoning socially behind all that, but people used to publish things under pseudonyms. I don't know. It's just, the thing is, I wish I were an expert on anything, but of course, the more you learn about this stuff, the more you want to know, and so much history is just lost to time.
Yeah. Do you try to incorporate at least a new song or maybe a new tuning into every set?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
That's super cool. Looking back on the first 1,000 shows, do any stand out either for weird things that happened with the audience or technical glitches or just like magical synchronicity moments or anything like that? Or are they all a blur?
Everything's a blur, but I think the first ones were pretty crazy just because the pandemic was in full bloom, you know, and it was so quiet out and people were applauding the nurses at about the time our podcast started. So you'd hear like people yelling and whooping out their windows. And you know how it was during the lockdown. It was just eerie and quiet. So everything was weird. So those early ones will stand out in my head, but we've had some weird stuff happen. I don't know, Meredith, what do you say to that?
There were some technological glitches that made hilarious kind of mistakes happen, but describing them would be underwhelming. It was like you had to be there.
Okay.
But I could just try to describe, like, for example, when I got the encoder box, one thing is like if you touch a comment, or there's some way too easy to do, or you know, it's way too easy to do it accidentally. There are a lot of features that are way too easy to do accidentally. There have been shows where, you know, we like, I don't know, if you touch something, that somebody's comment will be displayed on the screen. So I had so our friend Terry requested a song called Timbuktu. So he made a comment, Timbuktu ? And I accidentally displayed it over the screen and it was covering Craig's face. And I couldn't get it off the screen for the entire show.
Like it was a really profound headline or something. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
so obscure, like no one would know. What does that mean? Why is the word Timbuktu covering Craig's face for the remainder of the show?
have other artists reached out to you to like for their own genres try to do this and hit you up for help? Because I imagine you've, after 1,000 episodes, like know exactly like what device, what streaming stuff to get, what to not buy. Like you've probably become an IT expert.
Yeah. Yeah, people ask me. I think they're surprised that the best, you know, the thing about microphones that I would tell everybody is just, you don't want to use a native microphone in your device, but that's largely because it's too far away from the sound. And you can improve the sound quality more than you think just by putting the microphone very close to you.
Yeah.
So getting a lapel microphone is a huge improvement, even if it's not a fancy microphone.
Interesting.
Just because it's closer to you.
Yeah. And I mean, you must know, I know when you first started, there were a ton of musicians doing this. I don't think there's been anyone close to doing almost 1,000 consecutive shows streaming. Do you know of anyone who's come close to the numbers you are?
Not musical shows. No.
Yeah. It's incredible. So incredible.
Thanks.
Well, I think I tuned into the 1,000th and I didn't watch it live, but like a few thousand people had watched it. Is that sort of the average?
No, that was more than we normally would get.
Okay.
But that was nice to see. I can't believe we got to 1,000 shows either, or that we're not just stopping now. That it's you know, it's the best thing to do right now for us.
You guys made lemonade out of lemons, that's for sure. Like I it's been so cool to watch. And what time, and I mean, it's almost every day. What time do you guys, is it the same every night?
We play Pacific Standard Time, 8 o'clock. We play 8 p.m. We play a 45-minute set on Monday through Thursday. We take Fridays off. We play Saturday night also at 8, and then we play Sunday at noon, our Sunday brunch, and that's it. So 6 days a week.
So incredible. Congratulations to you too. I'll include a link in the show notes for people who want to click and finally watch this if they haven't yet, but it's so cool.
Thank you.
And yeah, that means a lot to us. It's nice of you to ask us about all this. Really.
Well, I mean, it's like you get a history lesson with your music performance, because you guys both know so much about these early tunes, and you've done so much for, I mean, what do you call it? Ragtime guitar? Is that the easiest way to describe it?
I don't know. I mean, nah, I don't even know, honestly, because I play all kinds of different stuff and I just play the way I play. I think people who study ragtime guitar would be a step ahead of me and actually, like, they've figured out stuff. Yeah, I don't know. I just play, I would just look at it as general guitar playing, but yeah, we play a lot of ragtime, certainly.
Our genre has this big PR crisis that it doesn't have a name, but it is a genre, and it is a genre.
I guess you would say it's ragtime but the emphasis on that kind of ragtime finger picking.
I wouldn't. I would say it's songs that were popular or failures, but songs that were issued, songs that were published, songs that were published between 1890 and the mid 1930s. Many genres like blues, country, novelty songs, popular songs, lots and lots and lots of pop tunes, and rags. And what made them fall into the genre label in those days was just the style in which they were played. Mostly, so a jazz band in the late 20s could take a rag and make a jazz performance, but the piece, strictly speaking, was a rag. Or a jazz band could take a blues song but make a jazz performance. I mean, everybody knows that the link between jazz and blues. or they could take a popular song but make a jazz performance out of a pop tune. So it was normal. I mean, it was a performer or a musician would just have a repertoire of songs that weren't necessarily from one genre, I guess.
Yeah. Well, having played 1,000 shows, I think you get to decide what you call this genre you play.
I think if we just say that we're a lot like the Grateful Dead, like that, that pretty much does. That's perfect.
Grateful Dead.
Yeah. That's all I should have said when I started mouthing off about ragtime guitar. Yeah, it's true.
We do need a name for this genre, but people, it's not roots music per se. Like, it doesn't fit in with the extant genre.
Yeah.
Called roots music. It doesn't fit in with the extant genre called folk music, and it doesn't fit in with the extant genre called old time music.
Yeah.
It's old time, good time, ragtime.
It doesn't fit in with the extant genre called ragtime music, though we have pieces in common. We have pieces in common with all these. You know, it's not gospel music, but we have pieces in common with all these genres. Pop, mm-hmm. It's not pop music, but we have pieces in common. I mean, the most accurate would be to call it pop yeah. music.
Because it's not popular.
Except his unpopular pop.
Unpop. Actually, that's a good name.
Unpopular today, popular 1890s to 1930s. Yeah.
You can check out Craig and Meredith's stream of unpopular songs.
But a lot of the pieces we play, like, were not popular, though, because they failed, but we like them. They're issued, but they never made a hit.
Yeah, that's true. Because there are a lot of tunes that, like, there are classic songs from every era that people remember. And a lot of times they really are great, great songs. And sometimes they're just kind of so-so songs, but they were in a movie, so people know them. And you know how it is. There's a lot of songs people just don't remember that are great. So.
Are you two still, like, going to antique stores and looking up sheet music, or does it kind of find its way to you now, or has the internet replaced that sort of element of it?
There's not a lot of antique stores that have old records and sheet music left here because the rents are too high. So no, I mean, I've always traded with other collectors and tried to avoid, you know, I don't have the money to go on eBay and spend hundreds of dollars on a 78. I wish I did, but I've just been persistently looking for old records and sheet music my whole life, and things just add up after a while. Right now, I wouldn't say no to, you know, a good stack of sheet music or records coming our way, but yeah, I guess I'm still actively looking for stuff. There's just nowhere to look in San Francisco. So there's maybe a couple of thrift stores. That's it. Oh, well, there's Jack's Record Cellar, but that's such a well-trafficked store. You're not going to find anything that every other collector wouldn't be able to find there.
So. You're talking about people who collect these, but I have to imagine you're two of the only collectors who also then actually make music out of this stuff, right?
Well, I don't know, because I think probably if you talk to old people into old music, a lot of them probably must collect stuff, or if they don't collect it, I know the old timers I used to run into who... Some of them aren't around anymore, but people who played back in the 50s and the 40s, they weren't old collectible records necessarily that they had. They just had this stuff, you know, they grew up with it. And I don't know. There's got to be other people out there performing. I don't know the answer to that. It's like ever since the internet sprung up and this stuff is so accessible, you don't have to own the originals of things if you want to just hear it or see it.
Yeah.
Oh, there's still infuriatingly lots of things that you can't find on the internet, because Lord knows I've tried.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. But I really, really love all this old music so much. You know, it's just nice to have it around and be able to go through it all and learn it and, you know, and share it with people who actually enjoy it a lot and, you know, have similar interests, but that we may never, ever have run into. Even if we had traveled to some of their hometowns and played gigs, you know, we might not have run into some of these people. So.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of doing something 6 days a week and sharing it for free. You're going to get connected with all sorts of cool people.
It's amazing. Some of the people we've run into.
And that's the best thing about the show.
Yeah, it is. It's true. It's the people.
Well, guys, congratulations. Here's to the next 1,000. I'll just interview every 1,000 episodes or every 1,000 show.
All right, we'll hold you to that. Can we get you to sign that in blood somehow? Or
You know how to find me. It'll be easy.
Okay. See you later, then.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
All right. That was my chat with Craig and Meredith. I hope you enjoyed it. We've got more podcasts coming even this week. We got a new Luthier on Luthier that just posted. I'm going to be sharing some Summit only podcast stuff. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for continuing to send me feedback to podcast@fretboardjournal.com. Till next time.